This episode contains the topics of death and neglect of a child, suicide, as well as sexual abuse. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to Momicide Podcast. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Kristen.
Today, in part two of the trial of Casey Anthony, we will be going over the trial, evidence presented, testimonies from forensics experts, as well as the final verdict in the case. In case you missed it, in part one, we covered Casey's life, her bizarre behavior after her two-year-old daughter went missing, as well as her arrest. Go back and listen if you haven't yet.
If you like this podcast, make sure you follow us, give us a rating in the podcast app, and share with all your true crime lovers. And we just want to take a second to thank everyone who's taken the time to share our podcast with their friends. It has brought us so many new listeners, and we somehow made it to the top charts already.
I am so shocked by this.
Same.
This is crazy. We were in the top 10 for true crime.
Yeah.
And at one point, we were in the top 30 for all categories of podcasts.
I know.
It's mind-blowing.
We have two episodes out, and it hasn't even been a week, and we're already on the top charts.
So yes.
Thank you guys so much for sharing and spreading the word. The more you guys do that, the more content we can come up for you. So please keep going.
Yes.
Yeah, we're super appreciative.
Yeah, we really want to say thank you. You guys have no idea how much it means to us, especially starting out. Everything makes a difference. So thank you so much. So tonight we're sipping on some blue lobsters.
Mm-hmm.
What do you got over there?
I have the pink lemonade.
Ooh, and how does it taste?
It's really good. I've never tried blue lobster before, so I'm pleasantly surprised. Tastes like a summer day.
Okay, I have the rocket over here, which tastes like those blue and white and red popsicles.
Yum.
It's amazing. Not sponsored, but Blue Lobster, if you're out there, send us some free drinks.
Hit us up.
Okay, so we're just going to get right into part two of Casey Anthony, and Kristen's going to lead us off.
After 3 years of Casey being in and out of custody, the trial finally begins in May of 2011, just a few months shy of Kaylee's 6th birthday. The prosecutor was Jeff Ashton, who's best known for his successful prosecution of Tommy Lee Andrews in 1987. This was the first breakthrough conviction in U.S. history based upon DNA evidence. The defense was Jose Baez, whose career was fairly fresh at the time, and he didn't have many big cases under his belt.
He really lucked out with
he sure did.
Getting this case, because now I think pretty much anybody who knows anything about true crime knows who he is.
Yeah, his career took off with this case for sure. The trial was televised for the entire 6 weeks and would spark a media frenzy with protesters outside the courthouse and the Anthony family home. On May 24th, 2011, both sides would begin with their opening statements. Prosecution starts with the timeline of events during the month of Kaylee's disappearance, mentioning that the day Casey's father witnessed her leaving with Kaylee, around 1 p.m., showed cell phone records revealing that Casey didn't actually leave the area of the family home until 4 p.m. that day. That same day, Casey was seen on security footage at Blockbuster with her boyfriend Tony and no Kaylee, and I think it's presumed at this point that Kaylee was already dead in the trunk.
Yeah.
Which is kind of messed up.
I totally think that she was.
Just going and renting a movie. No big deal.
Yeah. I think that she pretended to leave the house and then came back as soon as her father left. And I don't know whether the incident happened while she was gone or if she came back home with Kaylee and then it happened a little later or what. But mm-hmm. I definitely think that, well, we know that she doesn't have a job. We know that there was no babysitter. So I think she was probably just circling around waiting for her dad to leave so she could get back home.
A couple days later, Casey asked the neighbor if she can borrow their shovel, claiming that there was a root in the garden she had to dig up.
She's like, just a gardener.
Yeah, like conveniently when your child goes missing and no one can find her or contact her. Yeah, can I get a shovel?
Yeah, she doesn't strike me as a person that did a lot of housework or lawn work.
Yeah, conveniently needs a shovel.
Yeah, that is suspect for sure.
Prosecutors claim that Kaylee was in the trunk of Casey's car from June 16th until June 20th. And on the night of June 20th is when Casey was photographed at the Orlando nightclub participating in that hot body contest. So that means Kaylee was in the car from June 16th until June 20th. Casey dumped her body and then went out to party, which is, again, just unfathomable.
I can't understand how she just went on with her life as if nothing happened. Like she was having the time of her life at bars. How can you
do something like that and then go and turn around and go party? Like, what is wrong with you?
She is a sick individual.
She spent the following days at her boyfriend's house telling her parents that she was at a work conference in Tampa and that Kaylee was with the nanny. At this point, Casey's car was beginning to develop an odor. She texted her friend Amy, telling her that her car smelled like a dead animal. Later on, she would run out of gas, so she got her boyfriend to come pick her up and abandon her car in the parking lot of a local business where it would later be towed to a local impound.
So do you think this was like a little cover-up story that she had?
For sure.
Just in case maybe somebody noticed
something. Oh yeah, that was just a dead animal. Yeah, for sure.
The amount of planning and just conniving that she did is unbelievable to me. Uh-huh. Like, oh, I had my dead daughter in the trunk and now I'm going to just tell my friend that it smells like I hit a dead animal.
Like, you can't see me, but I'm shaking my head right now. In the following days, Cindy is anxiously trying to track Casey down so she can see Kaylee, only to be told a slew of different stories as to where Kaylee was. She once told Cindy that she had taken Kaylee to Universal, so Cindy got in her car and drove to Universal to see Kaylee. When she arrived, she phones Casey and says, I'm at Universal, I want to see Kaylee, only for Casey to say, oh, we're actually over in Jacksonville. Lie after lie. At this point, Cindy was starting to question Casey and worry about the whereabouts of her granddaughter. Other friends also started questioning Casey on where Kaylee was.
So another story, a little tidbit, is that at one point she told her mom that Zanny, the person that doesn't exist, was in a car accident and she had to go to the hospital to be with her and take care of her.
Casey went to the hospital to take care of Zanny.
She was taking care of the fake person. The fake person got in a fake car accident.
Good God.
It's just amazing the lies that she came up with. Another one, she said that they were at a hotel with a wealthy suitor, which what the fuck does that even mean?
First of all, these like crazy, crazy, outlandish stories. Shouldn't that be a red flag to Cindy? Like, I would think as like her mother, your nanny is in the hospital, you're with a wealthy suitor. Like, first of all, you have the world's most exciting life. Like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, I kind of wonder, like, how did she not become more worried earlier or sooner?
Yeah.
Because this is just such bullshit. And I don't know. I don't know if maybe Cindy just thought she's mad at me and she doesn't want me to see Kaylee. You know, this is kind of like knowing what we know now. We know now that she was dead.
Yeah.
Obviously, Cindy didn't automatically think that she was dead. She probably just thought she was being spiteful.
Mm-hmm. And she probably thought things were really weird. Mm-hmm. But she probably didn't let her mind wander to how bad it could actually be.
Right. Because
no one wants to think that their daughter could be capable of something like that.
Yeah. She gave her the benefit of the doubt, which I don't think she's deserving of that at all.
No. No. The following weeks consisted of more lies, partying at clubs, and the Bella Vita tattoo. This brings us to July 15th. George gets a call to retrieve Casey's car from the tow yard, the same car they thought Casey had with her in Jacksonville. Kaylee's car seat and toys were still in the back seat, and as they approached the car, there was a horrific smell coming from the trunk. Casey's father, a retired police officer, commented on how he thought it smelled like a dead body had been in the car. The tow truck driver, who had also smelled multiple bodies over his career from people committing suicide in their vehicles, also commented on the smell, as did Cindy.
Yeah, so I think they essentially were going to open the trunk, and George was thinking, please God, don't let my daughter or my granddaughter be in here. Yeah. So when they opened it and nobody was in there, there was a sense of relief. But with both of them knowing that smell.
Yeah. So from what I've heard, the smell of a dead body is a very distinct smell that you never ever forget.
Right.
So like, have you ever smelled?
Are you about to ask me if I smelled a dead body?
Not a human body, but okay. An animal, like a rotting animal.
Do you know what? I don't think I have.
Neither have I, thank God. That's not something I really ever want to experience in my life.
Yeah, I did a bio degree, so we did a lot of dissections, but that smelled just like formaldehyde. So I've seen a lot of dead animals, but I haven't smelled them.
A rotting corpse. Yeah, have that's you, a little different.
Yeah, have you smelled
I a haven't, animal? No, and I would rather not, but
yeah.
I know that every person who has, unfortunately, had to smell a decomposing body, whether it's animal or human, mm-hmm. I would assume they would smell somewhat the same.
Maybe not.
I don't know.
Yeah.
They say it's very distinct and it's not a smell that you can ever
forget. Yeah.
Or confuse with anything else.
Right. Which you would believe them because, you know, especially George, who was in law enforcement, you can imagine that he came across a few dead bodies
exactly
while he was there. So
Cindy calls all of Casey's friends and is finally able to track her down at her boyfriend's apartment in Orlando without Kaylee. She's given the same Zanny story. At this point, Cindy is fuming and wants answers. She calls 911 to report Casey had stolen her money and car and to report a possible missing child. During this period of time, Casey knows she's backed against a wall and can't carry on with this lie anymore, so she makes up a new lie. Kaylee had been kidnapped by the babysitter a month ago. The babysitter nobody had ever met. Cindy hysterically calls 911 again to report that her granddaughter is in fact missing and that it smells like there had been a dead body in the car. And you guys heard those 911 calls in the last episode.
It's just, you can hear the absolute terror in her voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I think prior to this, you know, they might have chalked the smell up to something else. But then once they realize that Kaylee's missing, they're thinking...
I'm sure their mind went to worst case scenario.
100%. And I think from the get-go, George especially, having had smelled it before, I think that he never changed his mind about whether or not she had involvement or whether or not Kaylee's body was in the back of the car.
Yeah. Prosecution begins to discuss the evidence found in this case. There were 400 different pieces of evidence presented to the jury. 400.
That's insane.
That seems like a very significant amount.
It does. So I think it goes without saying that we're not going to cover all 400, but we're going to go over the ones that really stand out, the ones that are like the smoking guns right. for either side.
Yeah. So there was a stain on the tire cover inside the trunk, which had chemical components that were consistent with decomposition. So, you know, when you open the trunk of your car and it's got that carpet on the floor.
Yes. Yeah.
When you lift that up, apparently there's a spare tire underneath that carpet.
Yeah. My car has a spare tire.
Okay. I don't think mine does. I've never checked. I don't know. Maybe it does. But that piece of carpet had that stain on it.
Mm-hmm.
That were consistent with decomposition. So they took a sample of that carpet mm-hmm. and used that as evidence in court.
Right. And I'll talk a little bit more about the decomp smell and the chemicals and stuff when we go over the trial too.
There was also a single strand of Kaylee's hair found in the trunk. So when someone dies, the portion of the hair that's still embedded into your scalp starts to develop a dark band around the strand of hair closest to the root. And the term for this is called post-mortem root banding, and it only occurs after someone has died, and it takes several days to develop. So the post-mortem root banding was found on this strand of hair located in Casey's trunk, further proving that Kaylee was decomposing before she was removed. Right. And I've always thought that this strand of hair was one of the most damning pieces of evidence in this entire case.
I know.
Like, how can you deny that she was... A, not in the trunk, and B, she was alive when she was in the trunk.
Yeah.
That's her hair. It's got the root banding on it.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I can put into words how much I don't understand how all of these things put together don't point to the fact that she was the one who did it and that the story that the prosecution gave, you know, was it the exact story? I'm sure there was maybe a couple differences, but I do fully and completely believe that Kaylee was in that trunk. Mm-hmm. And I think all signs point to that. And I don't understand how someone can see it otherwise.
I agree. There were also high traces of chloroform detected in the trunk, and Amanda will get into that in the next part. The family computer was seized, and the search history revealed searches for, quote, chloroform, how to make chloroform, inhalation chloroform, making weapons from household items, and neck breaking. The term foolproof suffocation was searched the day of Kaylee's disappearance. The search history had also been deleted the day of Casey's arrest, but this information, along with the foolproof suffocation, unfortunately wasn't presented to the jury because it wasn't discovered until after the trial was over.
Yeah, so I guess the person that analyzed the search history, I don't know much about computers or history, but apparently she looked at only one browser. So
right, because a lot of people use either Microsoft Explorer.
Yeah, or Firefox or Chrome or whatever.
Right.
So I think that one of the browser's histories wasn't looked at by the prosecution. So I think the defense was ready for the prosecution to bring this search up because I think the defense had found it, but it was never brought up. So I think they just left it.
Right.
But yeah, so that is just, I think, just such a misstep on behalf of the prosecution that they missed that.
Yeah.
Because that also,
it's like a rookie mistake.
Yeah, that also went along with their theory that stated that she was given chloroform and then suffocated, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, why would somebody search foolproof? Somebody who wants to murder someone and make sure that they die.
Right.
Right? That, I mean, it's really terrifying and disgusting to think about the fact that that's why she searched it, but there was nobody else who could have made that search on the computer. And I would have loved to see how the defense would have explained Casey out of that.
Yeah. So these searches were actually done during the work hours of Cindy and George, which means that the only other person who had access to that family computer during their work hours was Casey.
Yeah, without a doubt. Like, Cindy is a nurse. So she would have, you know, time stamps and clocking in and clocking out and people to say, you know, what shift she worked. And these searches, I believe, were made a couple of months before it happened. So it just kind of goes along with the thought that
premeditated.
Yeah, which is also so gross that she was thinking about doing this for so long.
How can you have those thoughts in the back of your mind and go on every day spending time and being around your child knowing that this is what you want to do to them?
I can't even explain to you the feeling I get even thinking about my child being hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So thinking about, I can't even say it out loud.
I know.
It just makes me so sick to my stomach. It makes me emotional.
Yeah.
To even imagine how somebody could do this to an innocent being, an innocent little child, let alone their own child.
This is what I don't understand about mothers who kill their children. Like, as a being on this earth, when you reproduce and have a child, it's just your instinct to keep that, your baby alive. It's like a motherly instinct.
It's in your genetics. It's in your brain.
Right.
Like, your brain changes chemically for you to literally want to do everything you can to keep the child safe.
Yeah.
So what is going on in her brain?
What is she lacking?
Empathy?
I don't know. It's
common sense.
It's always really disturbed me, but also kind of fascinated me how their brains are so different. How do you lack that maternal instinct? You are just born with it, right? Like, that's, it's evolution. That's what mothers are born with, to keep their babies alive.
Yeah.
And Casey doesn't have that.
She can't have it, because if she did have it and something happened that was perhaps accidental, she would have called
you would
police.
Have wanted to save your child.
She wouldn't have been partying and acting like everything was fine.
Exactly.
There's something not right with her.
Yeah.
Like, she is got something going on mentally that is so abnormal. And it's shocking. It's so scary mm-hmm. to know that there are people out there with children who
I know
lack the ability.
I hate even thinking about that. Like, I know this stuff happens more often than we want to think it does, and just knowing that there are children out there right now that are in homes that have the potential for something like that to happen, like I can't even. It just makes me want to like go and save them all.
Yeah, so I work with kids and with teenagers, so this is something that crosses my mind a lot, because you just want to be the person to make sure that they're safe and make sure they're comfortable. And I literally can't even tell you how many times I've given kids my own food for that reason, because I don't know if they have food at home or not. And you just don't know how they're being treated at home. So it makes you want to just love them even more.
Yeah.
But yeah, a little bit sidetracked. It's just unbelievable how somebody doesn't do everything in their power to protect their child, and so to think about them killing their own child for such selfish reasons because they want a party, I just don't get it.
No, it's so unnatural.
It's sick.
Casey's diary was confiscated, and there was an entry dated June 21st, so this would have been the supposed day after she had dumped Kaylee's body. She's writing in her journal, and in it was written, quote, "I have no regrets. Just a bit worried. I just want for everything to work out okay. I completely trust my own judgment and know that I have made the right decision. I just hope that the end justifies the means. I just want to know what the future will hold for me. I guess I will soon see. This is the happiest I have been in a very long time. I hope my happiness will continue to grow. I've made new friends that I really like. I've surrounded myself with good people. I am finally happy. Let's just hope that doesn't change," unquote.
I did not know about this diary or the diary entry, and I am just shocked. Ugh. Because the wording in it, it just points to, I hope the end justifies the means. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I hope that it was worth it to kill my daughter.
Yeah. What I don't understand with all of this evidence is how people are so willing to overlook everything and chalk it up to a coincidence. Like, her child is missing and murdered. They found her body. And conveniently, she has this diary post.
Conveniently
there were the family searches on the computer. Conveniently, there was a piece of Kaylee's hair that was proof that she was decomposing.
Conveniently, there was chloroform in the trunk. Conveniently, it smelled like there was a dead body in the trunk. Conveniently, she asked for a shovel. Conveniently this, conveniently that. It's not, at one point, it's not a coincidence anymore.
No.
It's mind-blowing.
Yeah. So when Kaylee's remains were discovered, she had been wrapped in a Winnie the Pooh blanket, stuffed into 3 garbage bags, shoved into a laundry bag, and thrown into a swamp within walking distance of the home.
So a couple things here. The Winnie the Pooh blanket, Kaylee's room was Winnie the Pooh themed.
Yeah.
And another thing about the laundry bag is that these were canvas bags that essentially they fit inside one another that came from the Anthony home. And the one that was missing was the one that fit inside the other one, or vice versa.
Yeah, they were only sold in packs of 2.
Right. Which is just like, wait, what? And another thing too, we'll get more into the defense's theory on what happened. So, I mean, I guess you could say, well, this stuff came from the home because they say that George disposed of the body. But I'll tell you straight up that I don't buy that George had anything to do with this. Mm-mm. And I think they were just grasping at straws.
Yeah.
And so the fact that I do not see how George having something to do with this is a plausible theory at all. This stuff just points to Casey, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I don't think this points to George at all.
No. We'll get into that with the defense's statement. It's absolutely ridiculous.
It is.
So when Kaylee's remains were found, there were 3 pieces of duct tape covering the mouth and nose area of the skull. How do you feel about that?
It makes me sick to picture, for one. And I just don't understand. I want to know what the duct tape was used for and whether it was something that was literally used in the murder or if it was something that was just used after the fact.
Yeah.
Maybe to cover her face because she couldn't bear to look at what she did.
Oh, just thinking of every possibility is just sickening.
There was one point during the trial that the prosecution, I believe, brought up a photo of where the duct tape was on Kaylee's face, and they kind of like superimposed it over Kaylee's face. Mm-hmm. And they had to take it down because obviously Cindy and George were just losing it.
Yeah.
Because that is just so terrible and awful for a normal person to look at.
Yeah.
I don't know what Casey's reaction was, but if she was reacting, I'm sure that it was acting.
Yeah. I think I remember, like, on a Nancy Grace special that I was watching, when certain pieces of evidence like that one were presented, Casey literally wouldn't even lift her eyes and look at it. Like, she was just doing everything she could just to not acknowledge and look. Because if she looked, she would risk showing some type of emotion, mm-hmm. or lack thereof.
Or making it look like,
right,
she did
so
it.
So for a lot of the trial, like, there are pictures of her just staring down into her lap because she didn't want to see it. She didn't want to see what she had done to her daughter. So that duct tape actually had it was made by a very specific brand. It's not a brand that you can easily find in home hardware stores. It's a weird sort of brand.
Mm-hmm.
And that specific brand of duct tape was also found in the family home. So again, not just a coincidence.
Yeah, not even just the home. Also, I think it was being used to put up missing child posters.
Right. Yeah, the family had used that roll of duct tape to put up the posters. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
another convenient,
yep,
coincidence.
So Kaylee was wearing a pink t-shirt with the words "Big Trouble Comes in Small Packages" when she was disposed of. And I always wonder if that was intentional on Casey's part, to dress her child in this shirt and then kill her.
Oh my gosh.
Big, like, trouble comes in small packages.
Yeah. This is the outfit that I'm going to put on my daughter.
Yeah.
When I murder her.
Ugh.
Maybe it'll make me feel better knowing that she's more of an annoyance, right, in my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I never thought of that. That's,
yeah,
gross.
Yeah. Prosecution wraps up by stating that no other conclusion can be drawn but a mother who killed her own child. Nobody else benefited from the death of Kaylee but Casey. She was able to have her freedom and live a good life without Kaylee. Casey lied. Casey had access to all of the evidence. Therefore, prosecution is pursuing a charge of murder in the first degree along with the death penalty. Trigger warning, we did a disclaimer of sexual abuse in the beginning of the episode, but this is where that part comes in.
So maybe just skip ahead a couple minutes if you don't want to hear this. This is definitely a really shocking quote that we're about to,
yeah,
go over.
Yeah. It was now the defense's opening statement. Jose Baez opens with saying, on the morning of June 16th, the door of the Anthony home was left unlocked and Kaylee knew how to escape. He said the ladder to the family pool had also been left up. That morning, Casey and George couldn't find Kaylee anywhere, so they went to look in the backyard, and that's when they discovered Kaylee's body floating in the pool. He goes on to provide a statistic stating that this is the number one cause of death among children across America, and nobody ever reported Kaylee missing because she never was.
And just as a little side note here, one of the medical examiners that testifies talks about accidental drownings, and she states that in 100% of the cases of accidental drownings, 911 is called.
Right.
And you know what? I just don't buy it.
Mm-mm.
Like, George worked in law enforcement.
Yeah.
He would know that there are no repercussions when an accident happens for a drowning.
Right.
He wouldn't say, oh God, let's not call the police.
Let's hide it.
Yeah, let's go hide the body. So let's make it look suspicious. Mm-hmm. I just think that this is complete BS.
Yeah.
And nobody in their right mind, let alone somebody who works in law enforcement, would think that the best thing to do is to go cover it up and drop the body less than a half a kilometer away from the house.
Yeah.
Let's make this look suspicious as hell.
Yeah.
And like she was murdered, and let's drop her body there with all of the stuff from our house.
Instead of calling 911 and trying everything we possibly can to potentially save this child's life.
Like, there's no way.
It doesn't make any sense.
It does not add up.
This is the defense's angle that they're trying to play here. So Baez begins to set up his case against George, saying that he was the one to dispose of Kaylee's body in the woods. He also went on to say that when Casey was 8 years old, George went into her room and started molesting her, and this went on for years. He also claimed that Casey's brother, Lee, also touched Casey, but it didn't go as far. Baez said, quote, "Casey, at 13 years old, could have her father's penis in her mouth and go to school and play with the other kids as if nothing happened," unquote. This is so disgusting.
It's so disgusting.
Like, we don't know if this happened or not.
No, we don't.
We don't know if it's true.
I think, you know, it just feels to me like they're coming up with anything that they can to make George look like a bad person, mm-hmm. to make it seem like it's plausible that he did this. And, you know, obviously we don't need evidence to believe somebody who says that she or they or him were molested. But when that person is a pathological liar and this topic has never come up, none of her friends, none of her boyfriends stated that Casey ever told them that this happened.
Yeah.
And I just feel so, so sad for George, thinking about the fact that I personally believe that they just came up with this for shock factor,
yeah.
to make Casey look like she was a victim, yeah. in a situation where she was anything but a victim. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, as her father, I can't imagine how betrayed
he felt. I can't even imagine how he must have felt in that moment. And not to mention, Casey and George had a very, very close relationship. Like, she was like a daddy's girl.
Mm-hmm. And she talked only highly of him,
yeah.
even leading up to the trial.
Right, yeah.
Saying how good of a dad and how good of a grandfather mm-hmm. he was.
Yep. She was constantly praising him. And then to turn around and drop a bomb like this, mm-hmm. like,
I think at one point the defense talked about even saying that he had started to molest Kaylee. And that the reason that he murdered her was because she was potentially getting old enough to say something. And the judge was like, no,
this is
not being mentioned in court.
Yeah.
There's nothing to back this up. I can't believe it.
You cannot accuse somebody of doing something like that when it's not true. For the defense to use that angle as their way of pinning this against George is literally probably one of the most disgusting angles I've ever heard in my life.
It's so low and awful to, they basically just use George as a pawn to get Casey out of
yeah.
what she did.
Yeah.
I think another thing that happened was that essentially George knew that the defense was going to come at him swinging. And, you know, he was warned of this prior. And essentially what he was told by his lawyer was that, you know, we don't want to see you reacting, and just kind of keep your composure, thinking, you know, that would be something that the jury would want to see. And I don't know if it affected it or not, but I feel like it might have been better in the eyes of the jury if he did react how he was feeling.
Right.
Because I don't know what I would think if I saw someone being accused of, like, if I was looking at someone's reaction when Jose Baez said what he said, I'm not even going to repeat it.
Yeah.
I think I would want to see him upset and shocked.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
So I don't know if this was the best way to approach it or not.
Yeah.
But either way, I don't believe it. And, you know, especially coming from someone like Casey, who literally, I don't know if she has ever told the truth.
Mm-hmm.
It's just bullshit to me. And I just feel like they just used him to get her out of what she did.
Right.
And I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall when they came up with this.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel so sad for him. I feel so bad.
Like, his granddaughter just got killed potentially by his daughter. And now he's being accused of being a child molester on top of everything.
Yep, a child molester and someone who just decided to cover up his granddaughter's death at the same time.
I can't imagine how that poor man felt. Baez used this statement to explain Casey's pattern of lying, saying that decades of unresolved trauma and family secrets had changed Casey's brain. She was forced to lie and survive by pretending everything was okay when it wasn't. And this made her lie about Zanny and her job. She lived a fantasy life. Which, there are people who are, unfortunately, molested mm-hmm. every day. Mm-hmm. And they do not grow up to be people like Casey Anthony. You do not grow up, something traumatic happening to you, whether it's that or something else, does not catapult you into living this fantasy life where you turn around and lie about every single aspect that you possibly can. It just doesn't happen. Again, I just feel like it's grasping at straws, just coming up with more bullshit.
That's totally what they were doing. I just, like I said before, I just can't understand, like, as a parent, how I would feel after losing my grandchild and then my own child coming at me with this accusation, and how betrayed and upset and shocked he must have felt. It's just, you know, we'll go on to talk about how they don't have a relationship anymore, and I completely understand. Mm-hmm. Because how could you ever have a relationship with your daughter after she allowed the defense to make up a story so serious and upsetting? And, you know, same with Cindy. You know, how can you speak to your child again knowing how they betrayed their own father? And the only reason they couldn't go after Cindy for having something to do with it is because you can clearly tell in the 911 call that she had no idea what was going on. So they, what did they do? They just went with the only other person that was left that they could blame, and that was George. It's so awful.
Baez went on to say that everyone was well aware of Casey's pregnancy with Kaylee, despite the family saying that they weren't aware until she was 7 months along. The entire family hid the pregnancy, so of course they would hide Kaylee's death as well.
Okay, those are two completely different things for one.
Yeah, and again, just such a ridiculous statement.
He's just trying to piece things together to make it make sense, but sorry, no. Hiding a pregnancy is not equivalent to hiding the fact that somebody died. There are a lot of people, good people, who hide their pregnancies for various reasons until they probably have to tell someone, and that's their own, you know, that's their own business. That does not equate to covering up a murder.
Baez stated that George Anthony carried around so much guilt about Kaylee's death that that is what drove him to commit suicide. He furthers his case against George by pointing out the fact that George had been having an affair during his marriage to Cindy, living a double life that consisted of even more lies and cover-ups.
I just find this so ironic that they're trying to essentially diminish George and his character by saying that he's a liar and a cheater, when the person that they're defending is the ultimate liar, cheater, deceiver.
Baby killer.
Like, what? So you're going to try to say, oh, because George cheated on his wife, he helped cover this up. Mm-hmm. Okay, what about the fact that your client that you're defending literally made up a whole ass person, mm-hmm, that was babysitting her child and hid the fact that her child was gone for over a month?
Yeah.
It's so, so unreal to me. Yeah. Like, what? You're going to start trying to make other people look bad when you are literally defending the person that looks the most guilty, mm-hmm, and lies about everything and steals from her family, from her friends.
Yeah.
Like facepalm. Yeah. Like, this is, no.
I know. Their tactic during this whole side of things was just insane to me.
But it's so backwards. Yeah, I don't get it.
It truly is. He goes on with his attempt to debunk all of the prosecution's evidence, saying that the smell in the trunk was caused by bags of rotting garbage, not human decomposition.
First of all, they bring everything from the trunk into the station as evidence, obviously. It's kept as evidence. There wasn't anything other than a pizza box in there to indicate that something was rotting. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, so the smell of human decomposition in the trunk was caused by pizza?
Rotting pizza.
Give me a break. I know what rotting food smells like, and yeah, I can guarantee that a person that smelled a rotting corpse would not compare it to pizza.
Yeah. Yep. He said the hair found in the trunk was not enough evidence to confirm a dead body had ever been in there, because they needed more hairs obtained to really confirm this as evidence.
I just feel like everything that they say to try to take the blame away from Casey is just like them trying to discredit all of the small things.
Yeah.
And I just don't agree with it. And I don't think that, I personally don't believe that they did a good job in making it seem like she didn't do it.
No, me either.
So
He even said that the reliability of the cadaver dogs was questionable because a number of things were done wrong when alerting the trunk of the car. And he went on to say something along the lines of, a dog can't testify in court, so how can you ever believe it? Like, you're gonna discredit the cadaver dogs too? Like,
because they can't talk?
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean?
Even though we all know how reliable they are. Mm-hmm. But no, that's not true.
And cadaver dogs, like we said in the last episode, can be one of the most reliable things to determine where a dead body is or if a dead body was somewhere. If cadaver dogs were not reliable, they would not use them.
Yeah, exactly.
And do you know, I would love to know how many trials that the use of a cadaver dog was used as evidence. Mm-hmm. And he's going to try to discredit something that's been used for such a long time, not only in terms of determining if a dead body was somewhere, but also finding dead corpses and how many dogs have successfully found dead bodies.
Yeah.
I don't like this guy. No. I don't know if you can tell.
Yeah, no, not a fan. He even throws out Roy Kronk's name, the meter reader who discovered Kaylee's skull in the woods, saying that this man had found Kaylee's remains months before, took her body and hid her so that he could place her back there later and claim the $225,000 reward, and that you can't trust any of the evidence surrounding where the body was found because it had been tainted by Roy Kronk.
Which is also BS. Like, he's just
so outlandish.
Yes, like, this guy called numerous times and even met with officers at the scene, this same scene where she was found, where she was finally found in December, and the police essentially just dicked around and didn't find it. And then he finally called again. It was probably eating away at him, like, these remains or this bag are eating away at me because there's still a little girl missing and I need to call it in because I can't live with myself if I don't.
Right.
And now he's being made to look like he's done something wrong. Yeah. And he adamantly denies this on the stand.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, no way, buddy. I did not do this.
Baez did everything he could to explain away all of the evidence, planting seeds of doubt in the jury's mind, saying that there was no credible evidence in this case and that Casey Anthony was nothing more but a loving mother.
Another note about Jose Baez that I learned is that he told Cindy and George that they were looking into George as a suspect, which wasn't true. And it's said that he did this so that George and Cindy wouldn't trust and cooperate with investigators, which is so shady.
Yeah.
He essentially said this. He told them a lie so that maybe they wouldn't provide any more damning evidence against Casey,
yeah,
which is just so, ugh, it's shady. It's awful.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to talk about the testimonies and forensics experts in the trial. So throughout the trial, numerous people testify. Cindy Anthony testifies 8 times. George testifies 6 times, Lee 5 times, along with testimony from Casey's friends, ex-boyfriends, and many specialists and experts. Many of Casey's friends and other witnesses are brought to testify in order to demonstrate how unbothered Casey was during the time that her daughter was missing. She never told anyone that Kaylee was missing and made up excuse after excuse as to where Kaylee was. As we've said many times, she was partying, she was getting a tattoo, she was doing anything but looking for her daughter. So I'm going to start with Cindy's testimony. So during many of Cindy's testimonies, she breaks down and cries. The vast majority of her testimony involves her being questioned about the timeline of events in and around the time that Kaylee disappeared, and all of the efforts that she made to reconnect with her granddaughter after not having seen her since July 16th. She's also questioned about Casey's numerous excuses for Kaylee's absence, which I think we've got into enough detail about, but just to reiterate how ridiculous her excuses were.
Mm-hmm.
Like, car accidents, and I'm over here, and now I'm over there.
Yeah.
You know, I'm with Jeff, another made-up person who was actually real, but wasn't close to her at all.
Yeah.
Cindy is also questioned about Casey's supposed whereabouts, which obviously we know we can't believe because it came from Casey and she was clearly lying. And this obviously conflicted with previous testimony in the trial, where the defense lied further about where she was and what she was doing. Just a snowball of lies. The defense states again that the only reason that Casey is lying is because it's a coping mechanism due to a history of abuse. And just to reiterate, I don't buy it. I think George was a good father and a good grandfather. And I think that even though he may have enabled Casey's lying and he might lie himself, I just don't buy that he had anything to do with the death of his granddaughter.
And just to clarify, like, we don't want to come across like we're trying to like victim blame or chalk it up to we don't believe that she was potentially molested, because we don't know that.
Right.
But truly, in my heart, I really, really don't think that this happened.
I would definitely say that it would always be the best thing to trust somebody who says something happened to them.
Yeah.
But I just feel like the way this came about and the fact that Casey is just a pathological liar and they were essentially just trying to get her out of this, I also don't believe it.
First time anybody had ever heard this story is conveniently in the middle of a murder trial.
Where they're trying to make George look bad. So let's just add this to the plate to make him look like he's even more of a shitty person.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. It's, you know, it's not like we're like, no, it didn't happen. But I think, you know, anybody who's listening to what is going on and the way Casey acted and the amount that she lies, I just think this was a scramble to try to make it look like George was a worse of a person than he is or was.
Yeah.
So George also testifies, speaking of George, and he testifies for the prosecution where they bring up his suicide attempt after Kaylee's body was found. So they bring his suicide note in as evidence and point out that his reasons for attempting suicide did not include his granddaughter's accidental drowning, nor him being responsible for her death, as alleged by the defense. And this is a good point for sure, because if you literally believe that you are about to take your last breath, you would admit to the things that you had done. And in your suicide note, you would have said something to point out the fact that you want to die because you can't live with what you did.
Right.
Which he never does. There's nothing in the suicide note that points to him being involved. He's upset about missing Kaylee. He's upset that Casey was involved. He essentially wants to go after Casey's friends because he thinks that because of them, she did this.
Right.
They essentially led her to do this because they were bad people. And another thing that I didn't know was that he had actually purchased a gun prior to his suicide attempt with plans to go track down Casey's friends to try to essentially scare them into giving some information, which is not something someone does who was involved.
Exactly.
It just doesn't add up. So during the trial, Dr. Jan Garavaglia, or Dr. G, testifies about the cause of death for the prosecution. So she was the chief medical examiner on the case, and she states that in her opinion, the manner of death was homicide due to the fact that Casey failed to report her child missing and that Kaylee was placed in a bag with duct tape over her face and thrown away to rot. She states that there's no other plausible explanation than homicide. I totally agree with this. And if it was truly an accident, a normal parent, a normal grandparent would just call the police. So that's why I really, truly believe that it was either intentional or there was some sort of foul play going on that led to her death that Casey knew couldn't be chalked up to an accident.
Yeah. And like, if she did drown, why was there duct tape placed on her face after the fact? You know what I mean? Like, there's so many things that don't make sense.
Yeah. And the defense tries to say that George shows up after Kaylee drowned and says, you know, what have you done? We have to cover this up. No person would do that. You would call 911 to see if she could be revived. Mm-hmm. And you would own up to what happened, especially if you were in law enforcement. You would know that there are no consequences for a person who has an accidental drowning of their child because they looked away for a second or because the gate was open or whatever.
Yeah.
There's no logic behind this at all, and it would just make it way worse.
Yeah.
So I just don't buy it at all.
No, me either. I agree.
So as we mentioned before, the defense also tries to say that the body was tampered with and that the meter reader who found it was just trying to get more reward money that he had found it far earlier, and then he moved it. And like I said before, he denies this big time. We'll see that essentially all the defense does is attempt to discredit anybody other than Casey who they can. Anybody who had anything to do with it. They just try to discredit them or make them look like a liar or make them look like they had another interest other than finding Kaylee or whatever. Yeah. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about the decomp smell and the chloroform in the trunk. So as we talked about before, George Anthony and the tow company manager testified that the odor from the car was potent and was unmistakably the odor of a dead body. So this is the grandfather testifying this, and from the get-go, both George and Cindy had stated that they could smell this. George actually states during his testimony that the odor was so strong that he couldn't drive the car home without rolling all of the windows down. The defense tries to point out that George nor the tow company had called 911 after smelling the odor in the car. As previously mentioned, a cadaver dog did alert to the trunk twice, but the defense argues that that's not exact or reliable. So they're just trying to say, you know, this did happen, but this is not 100% reliable. And this did happen, but why didn't you call 911 right away if you smelled a dead body?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it just comes back to the fact that nobody was thinking that Casey had actually murdered her child. Nobody's mind went to that. Mm-hmm. I think he was just glad to not find a dead body in the trunk, even though he had smelled it. Mm-hmm. And I think he was just really hoping that when Cindy tracked down Casey, that Kaylee was going to be around.
Yeah.
And then after the fact, he pointed it out. Well, you know, I did smell this. And, you know, maybe he said, I probably should have called the police right then. But, you know, the police were called within hours anyway. Arpad Vass, a forensic anthropologist who is an expert in his field with over 20 years of experience, performs various tests and takes samples from the trunk, carpet, and wheel well. The expert explains that there are roughly 30 compounds that are considered significant in the human decomposition process. He then indicates that 7 of those compounds were confirmed in Casey's trunk. Apparently only 5 were considered because 2 of the compounds were found in trace amounts. When Vass was asked by the prosecution if he believed there had been a dead body in the car, he responds, quote, I can find no other plausible explanation other than that to explain all the results we found, end quote. He also stated that the levels of chloroform found in the trunk were, quote, shockingly high, unusually high, end quote. Vass also performed tests on air samples and was shocked at the odor that came from the small cans that held the samples. He also associated the smell from the cans with human decomposition. When Baez cross-examined Vass, he tried to suggest that Vass had a financial interest in the case, to which Vass denied. Essentially, what happened was the tests that Vass uses to find these compounds in the trunk, apparently this was the first time that it had ever been used in court. Mm. So essentially, Baez was trying to say the only reason you want to use these tests is because you want to get your name out there and the fact that these tests are done and work, etc.
Right.
So an important note is that this testing has gone on to be used like hundreds of times in other trials since then.
Yeah.
Essentially what Baez was trying to do is just, you know, cast doubt on, you know, the testing methods and the protocols and Vass as a scientist. But, you know, the science is science. Mm-hmm. It was a legitimate test that showed these chemicals, the presence of these chemicals that are present when a body is decomposing.
And these are professionals who have been in their careers for decades.
Like, he is an expert in the
field. Top of the line. Like, how can you even begin to argue anything this man has to say?
I guess because you're biased and you just argue with everything.
Yeah.
Michael Sigmund, a chemist, told the court during his testimony for the defense that although the trunk did smell, there could have been other causes and that he couldn't definitively say it was caused by a decomposing body. So again, planting these seeds of doubt, they probably just searched for some expert that had this opinion in order to use them as the defense.
And the jury, they're just normal people, which like the average person probably hasn't smelled a dead body before.
Right.
So for them just to say things like, oh, it could be this, it could be that, like it's not necessarily a decomposing body. Like that sounds ridiculous to us knowing what we know, but to them, like it could potentially be believable, right? Mm-hmm. Like they don't know.
Yeah, exactly. So this same guy, Michael Sigmund, states that tests from Casey's trunk showed primarily the presence of gas. And he also said that there were other compounds like chloroform found, but that they were in very small amounts that gave very low responses, which really conflicts with Vass's claims.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. How can one professionals say that it's in astounding levels, mm-hmm. and then one say that it's in very low levels.
But I think it's because Vass is like the person who does these tests properly, mm-hmm. and he went on to use these tests in various different trials, yeah. and that these tests are able to detect the compounds far better than whatever methods Sigmund was using. Uh-huh. And I think that that's why Baez tried to discredit Vass by saying, you know, no, these tests are really new. This science is new. You know, these testing methods and protocols, like what was the quality control on the tests and yada, yada, yada.
Do you think Baez sought out Sigmund because he knew that he wasn't as experienced as Vass?
That would probably be something that Baez
like
would do.
The prosecution and the defense, they both have a choice in who they seek out as witnesses,
right,
or for testimonies, whatever. And that could be a strategy.
Like, let's ask this dumbass to testify.
Exactly. Like, let's ask this person who the jury doesn't know how much experience he has, but he's got this title.
Mm-hmm.
So the jury is just going to believe whatever this man has to say when in actuality, he's a fucking dumbass.
Yeah, and sorry, Mike. I don't know if you're a dumbass or not. This is just our theory.
Yeah,
so
if you're listening.
Don't come at us, please. So to go along with this, a forensic entomologist named Neil Haskell discusses that insect species that were collected from the trunk of Casey's car indicated the presence of a body for a short time before being removed. He said roughly 3 to 5 days. Surprise, surprise, the defense attempted to refute this theory, saying that insects could have been feeding on any decomposing material, not just a human body.
I think that's bullshit.
So do I, because what was it then?
Like,
what were they feeding on then?
There are farms. This is really like a grim fact, but there are farms, I can't remember what they're called, where people study dead bodies. It's literal dead decomposing bodies laying out in like a chunk of land.
Wow.
That scientists walk around and study. They study the smell. They study the insects that gravitate towards specific human decomposition. It's a science. Like, yeah. These very specific type of insects go only towards rotting corpses, not a fucking rotting pizza.
Yeah. So I think another thing that the defense said was, I think it was flies, the insects, and it's a specific fly.
Is it like a bot fly?
I think that might be
it.
And so apparently the defense also said there were only a few flies that were found, and if there was a dead body, you would have expected hundreds or thousands, which to me also just seems like bullshit.
But she's in a trunk,
right?
So I'm sure like swarms of flies can't get in, a few maybe,
mm-hmm.
right?
And how many of them were in the bags with her that they were dumped out of the car?
Exactly. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I know like I'm a bit biased because I don't like Casey, but there's a reason that I don't like her, and there's a reason that I don't like the defense's theory, and I don't like the way they went about trying to poke holes in it.
Right.
I just don't agree with it, and I don't think that with all of these things adding up, I just don't think that they did a good job in making it seem like it was bad science or you needed 100 flies instead of 2. Like, there's too many things for me.
Yeah.
That add together to say that Casey was the one who did this.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to talk a little bit about the hair that Kristen mentioned earlier. A trace analyst from the FBI, Karen Lowe, testifies and states that the hair found in the trunk resembles that of a strand of hair that was taken from Kaylee's hairbrush. However, hair comparisons are never proven as absolute to the individual, and it's usually based on similarities in color, which I didn't know. I thought that you would know if it was an individual's hair, so that was news to me.
Yeah, I thought that would be, like, specific DNA.
Yeah, but so apparently the DNA was tested in the hair, but that this can't be 100% as well. So they can't link it 100% to one individual. So a brief scientific explanation is that hair only contains mitochondrial DNA, which is passed on by the mother. So the mother's side of generations, it could have been any other brown-haired relative on her mother's side of the family is essentially what the defense argued.
Okay.
So the analyst also discusses the band on the hair that Kristen talked about that we call death banding, and that it is consistent with that of the hair on decomposing bodies. And the defense points out, you know, this is merely your observation and it can't be proven. And they're just kind of, again, just pointing out little things like but
mm-hmm.
to cast doubt on these experts like the FBI, like Arpad Vass with 20 years experience, like forensic pathologists. So we also talked a bit about the duct tape. A doctor named Gary Utz performed the autopsy on Kaylee. He said that the tape wasn't adhesive anymore after the body was found, but it was still attached to Kaylee's hair. This reiterated the fact that the duct tape was wrapped around her head, as the jawbone was still attached when the body was recovered. So apparently, normally when a body decomposes, the jaw detaches from mm-hmm. the body, but it wasn't because the tape was wrapped around the head,
mm-hmm.
keeping it there.
Right, yeah.
The defense challenges the theory by questioning whether the tape was actually wrapped around the face, and they essentially say, well, when you did the autopsy, the jaw still didn't fall off, so how do we know it was because of the tape that it stayed?
Which, what else would it be?
I don't know. Because she had been there for 6 months decomposing. A forensic pathologist, Wellner Spitz, testifies for the defense. He criticizes the medical examiner's autopsy of Kaylee. He essentially says that it was done incorrectly, it was done without care, and he attempts to refute the claim that the duct tape was used to kill Kaylee. He actually suggests that the tape was stuck on after the skin had decomposed.
Which, like, first of all,
what?
Let's just imagine that scenario. Who's going to go back to a decomposing body and put duct tape on it?
And it doesn't make sense either, because the duct tape was still attached because of hair on the body.
Yeah.
So I think normally the hair falls out.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But there was hair still attached because the tape was there. Right. So how do you say that that happened after the body decomposed? Yeah. I don't know. I think another thing, BS. And again, it's just such polarizing claims from the prosecution versus the defense.
Yeah.
Like, I might go as far as to say that the reason that the jury made the decision that they did was because they were just confused as hell.
Mm-hmm.
Like, here's this, but no, wait, here's this. Here's this, but no, wait, here's this.
Yeah.
And it's just really back and forth, back and forth. He also says that based on the autopsy alone, Kaylee's death could not be definitively ruled as a homicide, and that accidental death could not be ruled out, which just seems so silly to me.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about this before. If it was truly an accident, there was no foul play involved, nobody would wrap duct tape around their child, face and nose, put them in bags, and dispose of them.
Yeah.
Like, everything points to homicide.
Yeah.
Like Dr. G said in her testimony, you don't report your child missing for a month. She has duct tape wrapped around her face. She's disposed of near the home. It's just, everything points to homicide.
Yeah. What other explanation could there possibly be?
Which is pretty well exactly what Dr. G says.
Yeah.
And you know, this is one thing that confuses me, because essentially what the defense is trying to say is that since they can't find a cause of death, they can't say it was a homicide, which I believe is bullshit, because there have definitely been trials and people who have been convicted of murder where a cause of death can be made.
Yeah.
There, people have been convicted for murder in cases where a body hasn't been found.
Yeah.
So that's not flying with me.
No.
So while being questioned by the defense, another forensic anthropologist, John Schultz, states that the tape was not covering the nose of Kaylee's skull when it was found. This same expert also testifies that Kaylee's body was likely in the area that it was found for about 6 months. So I think this guy was testifying for the defense, and he kind of says something that contradicts what the defense was trying to argue. So he says, you know, the body was likely here for a long time, 6 months, which goes with the prosecution's theory. So that was kind of like a foot and mouth moment, yeah, where the defense was like, oops.
Yeah.
Because the defense had claimed that Kronk moved the body and it was there more recently or whatever.
Right.
So I think it's safe to say that the body was there for as long as it was.
Yeah.
Because we have a few people saying it at this point. Now I'm going to talk a little bit about the computer evidence. So in another one of Cindy's many testimonies, she actually claims that she is the one who made the computer searches for chloroform. So the prosecution, like we said before, is claiming that these were made by Casey. Cindy claims that she had been looking up chlorophyll out of concern for the health of a pet that was eating plants in the backyard, and that she searched for the information about chloroform because of its connection to chlorophyll, which, like, what? Yeah. There's no connection other than the spelling,
right,
of exactly the beginning.
Yeah.
It was also brought up that Cindy was actually working at the time the searches were made. Like, this was proven.
Yeah.
There were timesheets.
Yeah.
That showed that she was at work.
Yeah.
So at this point, it was essentially up to the jury whether they decided, you know, is this testimony convincing? Do I believe that Casey made it, or do I believe that Cindy made it?
Yeah.
And I think it's fair to say that throughout the trial and even after, that Cindy was still trying to stick up for her daughter.
Yeah.
And that's what I think that this was.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about stories where I hear things like that, where, like, the mother or one of the parents is trying to take up for their child, who probably in the back of Cindy's mind, she knows that her daughter is guilty.
Mm-hmm.
But do you throw your child under the bus and say, fuck you, I know you're guilty?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you try to do whatever you can to save your child?
Right. And something that I thought of is that I wonder if the verdict would have been different had there not been a death penalty.
I think it would have.
Because I think that that goes with what you're saying. And, you know, I think that, I mean, I guess nobody really knows what they would do in this situation until they're in this situation. But I think that if my child was on trial for murder, you know, I would want justice for whoever was murdered. Just as a parent, I think you just want,
mm-hmm,
you know, the other family to have answers. But I think in the back of my mind, if I knew if my child is convicted of this, they're gonna die, that might sway what I do.
Right. Like, even though Casey killed Cindy's granddaughter, even though Cindy probably knows that Casey's capable of doing something so evil, it's like,
it's still her daughter.
It's like, okay, I lost my granddaughter, but do I want to lose my daughter too?
Mm-hmm.
Like, even though she's fucking evil and twisted, like, do I want to lose the only thing that I have left?
Right. It'll just be like, my granddaughter is dead and now my daughter is dead.
Yeah.
So that's why I think that if there was no death penalty, if it was just, you know, life without the possibility of parole or whatever,
yeah,
I think that maybe Cindy would have told the truth.
Yeah.
Because I totally think that she's lying here.
Yeah.
And I totally think that she wasn't searching chloroform.
No.
Because of its connection to chlorophyll.
Yeah, no.
It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that's like an easy cop-out.
Yeah, as a parent, I guess, I just really don't, I don't know what I would do.
Yeah.
It's obviously,
again, back to that, like, maternal instinct thing.
Mm-hmm. Like you want to protect your child.
Yeah, you want to do anything you can to protect your child's life. But like you said, if the death penalty wasn't a factor here, that would definitely change my view on things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hell yeah, lock my kid up. They need to be in jail for, mm-hmm, murdering somebody. Like,
yeah,
of course they do. But if it was the other way around and it's like, okay, but they're potentially going to be killed for this,
mm-hmm,
I don't know what I would do. In the back of my mind, I would be like, if I don't do something or say something to try to save my child,
I
would almost feel guilty and feel like I was the one,
mm-hmm,
who
caused her to die.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I feel like this is such a deep conversation, and
yeah,
it's really hard to try to put yourself in the position of someone.
Yeah.
Especially with your daughter. It's not like your daughter is on trial for murdering someone. Your daughter is on trial for murdering your granddaughter,
yeah.
who was essentially her daughter.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
George and Cindy raised Kaylee. And I think George and Cindy just went about it in two separate ways. And Cindy tried as hard as she could to protect Casey. And George knew that she had something to do with it and yeah. knew she was guilty.
Yeah.
I think part of it is that I think that Cindy still to this day believes that it was an accident.
Yeah.
And I think that probably played a part in her wanting to protect her and wanting her to not die.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, you know, like this is a super intense convo. And how could you possibly understand what you would do?
Right. And that could just be Cindy's coping mechanism mm-hmm. too, is like she refuses to believe that Casey's capable of doing something like this, so she's just gonna go with it and believe that this was an accident, because that in her mind that's all she can possibly wrap her mind around, this like horrific situation.
Right. It makes her feel better
yeah.
to think that
yeah.
her daughter didn't, you know,
yeah, exactly,
viciously plan to murder her yeah. own child.
After 11 hours of deliberation, the jury comes to a conclusion.
For the 9th Judicial Circuit in and for Orange County, Florida. State of Florida versus Casey Marie Anthony. As to case number 2008-CF-15606-0. As to the charge of first degree murder, verdict as to count one, we the jury find the defendant not guilty, so say we all, dated at Orlando, Orange County, Florida, on this 5th day of July, 2011, signed for person. As to the charge of aggravated child abuse, verdict as to count two, we the jury find the defendant not guilty. So say we all, did it at Orlando, Orange County, Florida, this 5th day of July, 2011, signed for person. As to the charge of aggravated manslaughter of a child, verdict as to count three, we the jury find the defendant not guilty. So say we all, dated at Orlando, Orange County, Florida, this 5th day of July, 2011, signed for person.
So, as we just heard, Casey Anthony was found not guilty of first-degree murder. Can you fucking believe that?
I literally can remember how I felt when this happened, and it was just, like, pure and complete shock.
Yeah. Of all of the murder trials that I have come to know throughout the years, this was probably one of the most shocking verdicts I've ever heard, because there was so much evidence pointing towards she did this.
Yeah.
And everybody knew it. It was all over the media. Anybody who knew this story had the same opinion, is that she was guilty.
You'd be hard pressed to find somebody who didn't.
All the protesters think. Outside the courthouse, like, everybody was anticipating this guilty verdict.
Mm-hmm.
And then when that dropped,
mm-hmm.
that she was found not guilty, my jaw hit the fucking floor.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
Everybody just stopped in their tracks. Like, there is no way.
I was appalled.
Yeah. Like, and for good reason. There were just so many things that pointed to her being guilty, and the defense's theory, in my opinion, just did not add up. There was not enough to convince me that this was even plausible.
No.
And, you know, without a reasonable doubt, it's just like, I don't know how anybody doubted that she did this.
So all she was convicted with was 4 misdemeanor counts of lying to the police. And she was ordered to serve 4 years in jail, but had already served 3 while in custody. So 2 weeks later, she would be let out on good behavior and walk as a free woman. This sparked national outrage. The protests amped up outside the courthouse and the Anthony family home, and tensions became heightened as the Anthonys, as well as jury members, received hundreds of death threats from the public. The entire country felt like little Kaylee had been robbed of justice and Casey had gotten away with murder, which, in my opinion, she did.
She did. That's my opinion, too. And I think it's a lot of people's opinions.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable to me that you have a person who didn't report her daughter as missing, And then we find her a half of a kilometer from where this person lives, dumped. Her body is dumped. There's signs of decomposition in the trunk of Casey's car. Mm-hmm. She hid this from everybody. She made up stories to make it seem like she was still alive.
Yeah.
And I just don't understand how the jury came to this conclusion. And I think a lot of people don't understand it. Mm-hmm. So that's just what makes it such a talking point and such a huge trial, even to this day, that people will talk about. Like, can you believe that she is just living a normal life right now?
I know. Yeah.
I know. She got off after she killed her daughter.
Yeah. Soon after, a petition was created on change.org by a woman in Oklahoma asking for a new law to be created to increase the penalty to a fourth-degree felony for failing to report a child missing within 24 hours of their disappearance or within 1 hour of their death. This petition quickly went viral, gaining more than 1 million signatures in 24 hours and pressuring lawmakers to create Kaylee's Law, which is now effective in 12 states.
Yeah, so I guess there was one good thing that came out of this. And that's another point. I'm just so shocked that she wasn't even charged with child abuse. Like, she wasn't even charged with any of the lesser charges. She wasn't charged with manslaughter or child abuse. She was only charged with the lying to police.
I know, it's so ridiculous.
It's like, why didn't the jury at least charge her with child abuse? Why wasn't she at least charged with child neglect?
I know, it blows my mind.
Because she clearly was neglecting her child after she failed to even mention that she was gone.
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable to me.
For 31 days.
31 days. She was just partying and acting like nothing was wrong. And she got off with 2 years essentially in jail.
Yeah.
That were just the years that she was in jail waiting for her trial to happen.
6 years later, in 2017, Casey Anthony did an interview with the Associated Press, changing her story once again, now saying that she was actually sleeping when her daughter disappeared, and still to this day, she is unsure of what happened. She now works for an assistant to a defense attorney and uses her experience to help other people. In her interview, she says, quote, "I don't give a shit what anyone thinks about me. I never will. I'm okay with myself. I sleep pretty good at night," unquote.
Which, regardless of if you murdered your child or not, your child is gone. Your child is deceased. I would never sleep well ever again.
Agreed.
So her just saying that is just another sign of guilt.
Yeah.
You don't sleep well at night after your two-year-old daughter is murdered.
Yeah.
Whether you murdered her or not, you don't sleep well at night.
I would just be so, like, broken as a human.
I would never be the same.
Like, those words would never come out of my mouth.
Ever, ever, ever.
I sleep pretty good at night.
She's like, so selfish and narcissistic. Yeah. And she's a pathological liar. And I would argue that she's a sociopath.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I sleep well at night. Like, that is such a disgusting thing to say after your daughter was murdered.
Yeah.
Regardless of how it happened, how do you say, I sleep well at night?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's shocking.
I'm okay with myself. I sleep pretty good at night.
So, yeah. I mean, I don't know why I'm shocked, because we should just expect this from her, because she is so self-centered. She wants the entire world to revolve around her,
mm-hmm.
which I think is why she did it in the first place.
Yeah.
I talked in the first episode about how her boyfriend and her, essentially, she cut it off with Jesse Grund because she said he loved Kaylee more than he loved her.
Yeah.
I think that she knew her own parents loved Kaylee more than they loved her.
Mm-hmm.
And she just wanted to continue on partying and being the center of attention. And Kaylee was a burden, and that's why she did it.
Yeah.
It's so gross. It's so disgusting. Yeah. She is so obsessed with herself and being the most important person in her own life that she didn't want to have her child anymore.
Yeah. And for her to say, I sleep pretty good at night, it's like, well, yeah, you probably do now because you don't have this burden of a child to take care of anymore. And now you have your freedom, which you've clearly always wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And in her sick mind, that's enough for her to go and live a happy life.
Yeah. It just reiterates that was her motive. Her motive was to live a life on her own. And now that she is, she sleeps She has a good sleep.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So Casey now lives in her South Florida home and has little to no interaction with her family, who want nothing to do with her. So we did speak on this earlier. Like, mm-hmm. of course they don't want anything to do with her, especially George.
Yeah. I think Cindy periodically talks to her, but George doesn't talk to her at all, yeah, which is super interesting because I don't understand how you have two people with such polarizing opinions on their daughter and they're still married.
Yeah,
it's,
I know.
So it's pretty amazing to me that you can think. So I think in an interview that they do, Cindy says that she thinks that it was an accident, and George still thinks that she was guilty. So that kind of plays into the fact that I think Cindy was sticking up for her and trying to make it so that she wasn't found guilty. And, you know, the fact that Casey said in an interview she was asleep when it happened and she doesn't know what happened is just another big screw you mm-hmm. to her dad, who was thrown under the bus
yeah.
a million times over during the trial, for her to say, you know, I actually don't know what happened and what we said in the trial isn't what happened. Right. And I'm not sure.
Yeah.
It's just like another, like, it's just a slap in the face
yeah, yeah.
to her dad, who was used as a pawn yeah. to get her off.
On the 10-year anniversary of the trial, May of 2021, one of the former jurors did an interview with People magazine, and he thinks back on how he wishes he would have done things differently. He says, quote, "My decision haunts me to this day. I think now if I were able to do it over again, I'd push harder to convict her of one of the lesser charges, like aggravated manslaughter, at least that, or child abuse. I didn't know what the hell I was doing, and I didn't stand up for what I believed in at the time," unquote.
Which is so sad, I think. I feel like this happens often with juries, that if there are enough people that believe one thing, that it's really hard to go against the grain and to stick up for yourself, because if you're the only one that does so, you can create a mistrial, right?
For the jury to come to a conclusion, it has to be a unanimous
decision. Every single person, like, even if one person says no,
right. Then so it would be a mistrial. So I feel like even if there was somebody who had an opinion that differed from the rest, for them to stick up and say, like, hey, like, I actually think that this happened, and then everybody else in the room is probably being like, well, it's 9-1, mm-hmm. or however many.
Yeah.
Like, we need to come to this conclusion. So yeah, you probably just feel like you don't have a voice.
Yeah. And how many people may have held back thinking that that's what the majority thought.
Yeah.
You know, like, there are studies that are even done, studies on, you know, psychology, where they have people sitting in a room saying the length of a line, like which line is longer than the other. And it's clear which line is longer. And people will start to say that the shorter line is longer than the longer line if other people are saying it.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, they're starting to say, even though it's right in front of their face, they say that one thing is longer than the other, even though they know it's not, just yeah. because other people are saying it. So yeah. how does this psychology come into play with something as complex as a murder,
right.
where there are so many things involved?
Yeah, you're more inclined to go with the majority just because right. out of what? Pressure, embarrassment,
mm-hmm. just the inability to speak up for yourself yeah. as well. Like, there might be people who are passive, who just don't have it in them to stand up yeah. and say, you know, like, I'm a passive person. Yeah. I find it hard to even stick up for myself. So if I'm in a room, maybe there's some people in there that are intimidating. And you're in a room where you have to speak up, otherwise something isn't going to change. That's a scary thing to do, mm-hmm. too. So I kind of wonder how many jurors thought, you know, I think she did this, but I can't say anything because I think most people don't think that.
You're right, yeah.
And if I'm the only one to say no, then there's a mistrial and we have to do this thing all over again with a whole other jury. And then I'm the idiot
yeah.
in everybody else's eyes.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the jurors probably really argued the whole circumstantial evidence thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have to prove the evidence without...
Beyond a
reasonable doubt. Thank you. And because Baez did such a good job, I don't know if you would call it a good job or a bad job, but he made the jury doubt everything, every last possible way he possibly could to make them doubt things, he did.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, they were stuck in this place where they're like, and the fact that she was on trial for the death penalty too.
Yeah.
It's like, is this enough? Do we actually believe this beyond a reasonable doubt?
And this person's gonna die.
To convict this person of first degree murder plus the death penalty. Like, that's a really big decision mm-hmm. to come to.
I think a key word in that statement is reasonable, because I think a lot of people think like there can't be any doubt, but no, it's beyond a reasonable doubt.
Yeah.
And to me, reasonably, I have no doubt that she did this.
Yes.
Because there was so much time passed between the crime and the trial and finding the evidence, etc. Obviously, there's some things that are missing. There's some pieces that are missing. You can't argue with the fact that there are so many things that add up and point to her being guilty of this, whether she did it on purpose or by accident.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think that there is a reasonable doubt.
Yeah, I know.
So yes, Baez casted some doubt, but I don't think the doubt was reasonable.
No.
Right? Like, yep. It just wasn't enough for me to make it seem like anybody else did this but Casey.
I know.
And especially not George. I don't buy that shit at all.
Yeah. No, I agree.
So what do you think happened?
I keep going back and forth between it was premeditated.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm more inclined to say that it was premeditated. For sure, I believe she's guilty, obviously, but I haven't come to the conclusion yet of whether it was premeditated or if it was accidental, but an accident in the way that she did use chloroform or some other type of substance, whether it be Xanax or some other type of substance to subdue her child into mm-hmm. going to sleep.
Right.
So that she could go out and party.
Yep.
And she accidentally gave her too much and that resulted in Kaylee dying. And then she did all this shit to cover it up and hide her body and whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't get past the internet browser history.
Yeah. And I feel the same. I go back and forth. I'm like, but maybe it was an accident. And then I'm like, but the browser.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think honestly, I think she was still doing that. I think she was giving her something to sedate her.
Yeah.
But I think on this day that she gave her chloroform and waited until she was passed out. And then I really do think that she suffocated her with the duct tape. Because that is a search on the computer.
Yeah.
And I think she made her pass out first because she couldn't bear to see her struggling.
Yeah.
I feel so sick saying this. This is so sick. I don't know if she did it while she was out before she returned back home or what, but I think after George left for work, she did it and put her in her trunk. And then I think that's when later that night she went to Blockbuster. And, you know, she made a bunch of phone calls that night, too. And that could have just been her trying to create an alibi or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely think she did it. And that's my take on it. I think that she was tired of having to take care of her child. And I also think that because of her selfishness, she didn't want her parents to have her either.
Yeah.
Because she's just so self-centered and she just did that so she could move on with her life and not have the burden of taking care of a child and she could go party as much as she wanted, which is why that's exactly what she did after she was gone.
Yeah, she was living her beautiful Bella Vita life.
Which is just, man, it's sick. It's so sick. So the judge, Belvin Perry, in the case, he talks about what he thinks happened on the first 48. So he does a little cameo on the first 48. And he doesn't think that Casey intentionally killed Kaylee, but he also believes that she used chloroform in the past to knock her out or sedate her, and that she accidentally gave her too much. Which is something that I kind of thought of too, but I just, like you said, I can't get past the searches.
Yeah.
Like chloroform, yes, it makes sense if she searched that.
Yeah.
But to Google foolproof suffocation,
neck breaking.
Yeah.
How to make weapons from household items. Like there's too much.
Yeah. So the judge goes on to say, you know, she did it by accident, realized that she killed her, panicked, and that's when she covered it up.
Mm-hmm.
He himself, the judge, was surprised by the verdict as well. And he also states that he could see that both sides had blemishes in their cases. And he thinks that that's what ultimately led to Casey getting off. So extremely unfortunate. Hopefully we did this case justice. There's literally so much to comb through.
Yeah.
So to get it all in and figure out what's important in two parts, I hope that we did a good job.
Yeah. And let us know your guys' thoughts.
Yeah. So leave us some feedback on Instagram. And if you like this podcast, don't forget to subscribe, leave us a rating, and follow. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.
See you guys next time.